Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions expressed on Wolf Dog Radio by our guests and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of the production team of the hosts of Wolf Dog Radio. We are open to your ideas for future radio programs. Please feel free to email us with questions or comments at questions@wolfdogradio.com.
Good evening, friends. I'm Krista Ward, and welcome to Wolf Dog Radio. On this episode of Wolf Dog Radio, we will be continuing our interview with Katie Beaver on the importance of training and recognizing certain behaviors in canine companions. When we last left Katie, we were discussing training methods, including degrees of dog bites and other things. Katie will be available following the interview to take your questions live and discuss any aspects of both shows. Let me give you a quick recap on Miss Katie. Katie has been working at All American Dog Training, Grooming, and More in Burleson, Texas for just over 2 years. She is currently accumulating enough hours to qualify for taking the Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers, CCPDT, Knowledge Assessed Test, which is a standardized test that proves those who pass have a strong foundation of knowledge and skills in science-based dog training. Cat, Wolf Dancer, and I, actually, let me tell you, Deanna is going to be helping me host the show tonight. I apologize. We are going to be discussing a few of these methods after the interview, including personal experiences we have had in these similar circumstances. Deanna, I am really looking forward to picking your brain and discussing how those of us with new puppies, older dogs, and rescues can put some of these techniques to good use.
Krista, I am so impressed when someone in the wolf dogs community actually takes the time to really get to know these animals that they bring in as family to their home. I think maybe on a lesser scale, taking in a wolf dog is similar to having an exchange student coming into your home. You make both to make experiences happy ones. We have to take time to learn the culture, the language, and while the student, aka the wolf dog, learns to adapt to our crazy human ways. While the exchange student does get to go home after a year, we find that wolf dogs, however, get to stay for their life, and they're assimilated into the family as family members. Katie's dedication just shines through her work. I agree with you, and I can't wait to discuss the highlights of these two shows. And we'll be right back after this message from Blue Buffalo.
All dogs, no matter the breed, are descendants of the wolf. They share many similar traits, especially a love for meat. So we created a food that satisfies a dog's wolf spirit, high-protein Blue Wilderness. It contains more of the chicken, salmon, or duck dogs love. There's a Blue Wilderness specially formulated for adults, puppies, small or large breeds, plus weight control too. If you want your dog or cat to enjoy a high-protein diet like his ancestors once did, then Blue Wilderness is for you.
This is Ian Dunbar, and you are listening to Wolf Dog Radio.
And now we bring you Katie Beaver, part two. What are the steps or the periods of puppy development?
Oh, puppy season, yes. So puppy development, puppy season is on the way, guys. So puppy development is something that we really should learn about, especially if we're going to be getting a new puppy or if we are a breeder. We all need to understand how wolves and dogs develop because there's differences, and they're going to have quite a few different approaches necessary to help them become socialized. So a study that I found was really interesting was done by Dr. Catherine Lord of Wolf Park, Indiana, which consisted of her raising 7 wolf puppies and 43 dog puppies. And in her study, she discovered that wolves and dogs develop their senses along a similar timeline, but there are very different beginning and endings for their socialization periods. So when we are talking about a socialization window, this is when our puppy is most susceptible to learning about their environment. They are old enough to retain memories of objects, people, places, sounds, smells, anything you can think of that they can perceive. They're old enough to form an opinion about those things and remember that for the rest of their life. So a lot of us have wolf dogs of lower content, so we should generally expect them to develop along a similar timeline as dogs. But for those of us that do have the higher contents, I do want to start there, and we can go back down to the dog development stages later. So when we are looking at the development timeline of a wolf puppy, the first period that happens is the neonatal period. And when wolf puppies are born, they are born in a den, and they are generally going to be few in number. Generally, I think a wolf litter is about 3 to 5 puppies, maybe a little more or less, depending on the fertility of the dam and the success of the litter, whether any puppies fade or not. But in the neonatal period, puppies are blind. Their eyes will be closed, and they're deaf with closed ears. They only have a little bit of a sense of smell. Taste and touch are their primary senses. They're not able to regulate their body temperature, so they depend on their puppy pile and their mom to keep them warm. So in this stage, most of the time, the only thing they're going to react to is milk and touch. If you touch a puppy, they will snuggle closer to that touch because they're either seeking milk or they're seeking warmth. They will crawl a little bit using mostly their front legs. Again, they need to be able to move closer to mom or closer to each other for food or for warmth. They have a little bit of balance to help them with nursing. They need to nurse on their bellies, so they need to know which way is up and down. And they can whine and yelp a little bit. They'll make a little bit of noise. The transitional period is going to start when their eyes open to about 20 to 24 days. So the neonatal period went from birth to when their eyes open, and generally their eyes will open around 12 to 14 days. So once those eyes open, that is actually going to be the beginning of the socialization window for wolves, because once their eyes open, they will start to walk around, and they will start to explore their den and their surroundings. They will really start to get moving, and this is where they're starting to make they're starting to form opinions about their surroundings. Now, it's very important for us to remember that when a wolf puppy develops a new sense, they enter a fear period. Everything is brand new once they've started walking, and they need to be able to figure out, is this dangerous or is this safe? If they feel any kind of fear or discomfort in a fear stage, in a fear period, they will remember that for the rest of their life. So when we are, for example, bottle feeding puppies, if you're a breeder out there, you need to remember, as soon as your puppies start to open their eyes and walk around, you should assume that they are entering a fear period, and you need to be very careful about their environment and make sure that they only have positive experiences so that they won't be scared of everyday noises or people coming in and out or other animals, sights that they may see. Now, the socialization period for wolves is hypothesized to close at 11 weeks. So between their eyes opening and they start walking around to 11 weeks. Now, of course, they have a lot more development between then and 11 weeks. So around 3 weeks is when the wolf pups will begin to explore outside the den. They usually should stick close to the entrance, and their hearing will begin at approximately 27 days. So again, as soon as they start to hear, all of these new sounds are coming at them, and it's scary. So they're going to enter another fear period, and they need to figure out the noises that their siblings make or that their mom and pack makes is normal, and those are safe noises. But let's say there's a predator, a bear in the neighborhood, or a big cat, or let's say for those of us who are raising our animals at home, maybe they hear the vacuum cleaner and it just scares the pants out of them. So we need to be careful to expose them to sounds in a positive way. Once they reach about 4 weeks, usually the wolf pack will leave them alone for a couple of hours while the mother will hunt. The puppies can howl at this stage. They'll start play fighting. They may start to compete for a little bit of social dominance here, where they are competing for resources like milk and toys. Around 5 weeks is when the weaning begins, and they will start to eat some solid food that is regurgitated by their mother or by the other adult wolves. And they will start to follow the adults for about a mile from the den. So they're starting to get more active. They're gradually increasing the perimeter of their world. They're learning about new places, new animals, new sights, sounds, and smells. Around 8 to 10 weeks is when the adults will abandon the den, and they will move the pups to a rendezvous site. And around this time, weaning is complete, and the puppies will be eating only solid food. They will not be nursing anymore. And this is also when their adult coat starts to grow in. Around to 16 weeks, their eyes will gradually change from the blue that they were at birth to the mature yellow, gold, or green that we see on adult wolves. And again, just a reminder, blue eyes are a dog trait only. So if you ever see a puppy that has retained blue eyes past about 8 to 16 weeks, that is a dog trait. So next, wolves will enter the juvenile period, which is from 12 weeks approximately to sexual maturity. So about 12 weeks old, they'll start to go on some pack hunting trips. They're learning how it works, and they can return to the rendezvous site by themselves. Around 4 to 6 months, their milk teeth will be replaced by their mature teeth, and their winter coats are starting to become apparent. And around 6 months of age, the wolf puppy has reached close to mature height and weight, and they will be nearly indistinguishable from adults. So physically, as far as size goes, wolf puppies reach their mature adult size by their first winter. Long bone growth is completed by the age of 1 year, and at around 22 months on, is when sexual maturity can happen. There have been documented cases of pure wolves sexually maturing earlier than 22 months, but it is not the norm. So usually by their second year is when we are expecting wolves to sexually mature. Some take a little bit later. They may not mature sexually until 3, 4, some even as late as 5 years of age. Once the wolf puppy reaches sexual maturity, this is generally when they choose to disperse from their pack. Not always the case, but they start to feel more pressure to breed at that age, so they're looking to become more independent, and they're looking to start their own family at that time. So what all of this means as far as from the neonatal period to sexual maturity is that our wolf dogs are going to go through a lot of changes. And again, for those of us that have wolf dogs with significant wolf content, we should expect our puppies to enter a fear period every time they develop a new scent. and that their socialization window begins as soon as they open their eyes and start walking around. So when we talk about a fear period for wolf puppies and for higher content wolf dog puppies, the fact that they have so many fear periods when they're developing means that they're going to need a lot more intense exposure to different stimuli to reduce that genetically pre-programmed fear response. So we're going to need to basically expose our puppies positively to stimuli for 24 hours. And even then, if we are exposing them positively to things 24/7, it still may not be enough to completely overcome that genetically pre-programmed fear of new stimuli. So this is why wolves and higher content wolf dogs have so much retained fearfulness once they've matured. It all starts at a very young age. So that's why it's really important for breeders to start their puppies out right and have a solid socialization program in place. If you are going to be bottle feeding your puppy, then you're the one who's going to be determining your animal's capability to handle stress for the rest of their life. So it's really important that we understand every time they develop a new sense, things are going to be really scary for them for a little bit, and we need to make extra careful decisions about how we expose them to things. For dog puppies, things are a little bit different. Generally, dog puppies don't enter their socialization window until approximately 4 weeks of age. Dogs don't start walking generally as soon as wolf puppies will. Most dog puppies are pretty much just fuzzy little potatoes up until about 4 weeks of age, and that's really when they start exploring and playing and learning about their world. So for dog puppies, they only have that one fear period at around 4 weeks of age when their socialization window starts. And for dog puppies, there's a little bit of disagreement, but generally most behaviorists think that the socialization window for dogs ends at 12 weeks, although there are still some scientists who contend that it lasts until 16 weeks. Now, there is documented evidence that both wolf and dog puppies will enter another fear period around 10 to 12 weeks of age, which, especially for dogs, is when they will be sent to their new home. So for those of us who have lower contents, where maybe the breeder feels comfortable keeping the puppies to 8 weeks, 9 weeks, maybe 10 weeks, we have to remember that we need to be careful about keeping their whole trip home positive, because they may be in a fear period as well. So, again, as soon as you get your puppy, we need to start establishing a positive experience for every new person, place, and object that they see or meet. It's really important that we remember that these fear periods will affect our animals for the rest of their lives. Any scary or uncomfortable experience that occur during a fear period, they will remember that for years and years and years. And if your puppy is consistently afraid and stressed during the socialization window, it will be very likely that your animal will have a poor ability to handle stress later in life versus a dog or a wolf dog who was positively introduced to things in a way that they could handle it. They were comfortable, they were enjoying themselves, they will be able to see or meet new people, new places, go into different environments, and they'll be able to handle that better because they have a stronger foundation of encountering something new and then overcoming that stress and understanding, oh, I'm safe after all, this is fine.
Speaking of the fear period with the puppies and everything, what are other techniques that people use that may have a negative effect on the puppy?
Okay, so there's a couple mistakes that people make when they're trying to socialize their puppies. It's really important to know how to properly socialize our puppies because, again, they're going to remember these experiences for the rest of their lives. And especially for very reactive animals such as wolves and wolf dogs, who are more sensitive to novel stimuli than dogs, we really want to be very aware of how we are introducing them to new things during the socialization window. A lot of people make the mistake of flooding their puppies, which is totally overwhelming them with new people, new places, new experiences. This can have a very negative effect as the puppy is not afforded the time to process what is happening and conclude that it is not being harmed or threatened. There's a high likelihood that flooding your puppy will cause them to develop severe behavioral issues in the future. Flooding is an outdated technique that people have used in the past where they would just totally overwhelm an animal with something they were afraid of until it basically shut down. And the handler or the trainer would view that shutdown animal as one that has learned that they were not being harmed, that they understood they were safe, but that's not the case. When the animal shuts down, they have become so stressed and so overwhelmed with fear that there's just no way their body can handle it, and they just power down and hope that it stops. So an example of flooding. Let's say we have a wolf dog puppy who is afraid of a lawnmower. If you were going to flood that puppy, they would be forced to stand next to that running lawnmower, and any attempts to escape would be prevented. If they displayed any fear-based aggression towards the lawnmower, they would be punished. And they would eventually become so overwhelmed with panic that their body would just become completely exhausted and they would shut down. Again, in the old days, people used to think that when they got to that shutdown stage that they had magically learned that it was safe and that it was cured of its phobia. Repeating this flooding technique until the dog falls into a shutdown state every time they come near, for example, our lawnmower used to be mistaken for, oh, yeah, my dog is fine now. They're not afraid of the lawnmower. But there's actually still a great deal of fear present. The dog has just learned that there's no escaping, and they feel totally helpless. So they have learned that the only way to make that fearful experience stop is to just shut down and wait for it to finish. This state of learned helplessness is very dangerous because, again, the dog is still in extreme fear, and it's sometimes referred to as a ticking time bomb, where someday they are just going to reach such a high level of stress that they're going to react, and they're going to feel like they need to fight for their life. Again, going back to the stress signals that we talked about earlier, we really need to be mindful of how our puppies are feeling and how they're handling our socialization sessions. So let's say we have a wolf dog puppy, and we're going to take it out to meet people. We want to make sure that we pay very close attention to our puppy. Look for those stress signals. Is he yawning really hard? Is he panting really heavily? Is he drooling a lot? Is he trying to avoid contact with people? If you see any of these stress signals, that's a really good time to stop and give your puppy space and find a new way to make them feel safe. So if you've got them out and they're meeting a crowd of people and you notice them start to get stressed out, okay, thanks, guys. Thanks for saying hi. Bye. Take your puppy away. Put them in some place isolated where they feel like they're a safe enough distance that they can de-stress, they can focus on you again, try to play a little game with them. See if you can find a way to turn that stressful experience into a positive experience again. Because again, during that socialization period, puppies are going to remember those stressful experiences. So the quicker we cut those stressors off, the easier it's going to be to salvage that situation. So try your best to avoid flooding your puppies. Flooding is a very dangerous technique. It can result in an animal, again, who feels like they need to fight for their life or fight until they can escape. So we want to make sure that we set our animals up for success and only go about socialization gradually in a way that makes them feel comfortable.
What about puppies or that are older and adopted out or sent to their forever homes? How do you, what kind of information could you provide for owners in that situation?
Quite a few people who have adopted older wolf dogs or puppies who have already gone past their initial socialization window. And there's definitely ways that we can work with them as well. There's going to be a lot more work involved, though, than simply taking them out and having happy experiences with them like we can do with the really little puppies. Older animals, and when I say older, I just mean animals over the age of 4 months. If they have not had the most ideal socialization experience as a puppy, then they may be very fearful of everything new. Every person, every place, everything can be terrifying for them. And they're going to be very sensitive to any change in their environment. It's still possible to socialize them, and I do believe that it's very important to try to socialize them, because our goal is to reduce the stress that our animals experience in their life. But the approach that we take with these older animals will be a bit different from the approach that we take with a young puppy that has a blank slate. There's going to be a lot of work involved. There are some important concepts and methods that should be understood by the owner or the handler before any attempt is made to even take this older wolf dog out. We have to remember these guys are a single event learner, meaning it only takes one scary thing happening to them to destroy their confidence and trust. And it can take weeks, months, even years to gain that trust back. Some animals are so sensitive that you will never be able to repair that bond of trust once it has been broken. So as you can see, it's critical for us to thoroughly prepare ourselves before we enter owning a wolf dog of an age that's older than 4 months, because we may have a lot of work cut out for us to help them de-stress to the point where they can exist at least comfortably around people and everyday human life.
I'm going to mesh these last two questions in as one.
Okay.
If that's okay with you, and just kind of let you transition everything into one response on this last little bit, since it kind of coincides together. What are the training methods that you use, and what pitfalls or problems can come up while training an animal?
Alrighty, so I do have a pretty big answer to this. There's quite a few different methods that can be used to work with animals, especially those like our wolf dogs who are more reactive and fearful than the average dog. So when we're dealing with animals like that, we are going to introduce training concepts that are specifically designed to help them cope with that fear and even reverse their feeling of fear and turn it into one of tolerance and even acceptance. So the first one that I want to talk about that's used the most often is going to be classical conditioning. Other names for this are Pavlovian conditioning or respondent conditioning. So this is a technique that was discovered and developed in the 1890s by a Russian physiologist named Ivan Pavlov. And this method involves teaching the animal to associate a neutral stimulus with the physiological response caused by an unconditioned stimulus. So that sounds a little weird. An unconditioned stimulus, for example, would be like drooling when the wolf dog sees or smells food. They can't help it. It's something their body does naturally in response to perceiving food. A neutral stimulus is something that has no inherent meaning to the animal. It's just part of their environment, or it's something that we're saying or doing, and they're just kind of like, oh, okay, whatever. There's no behavior associated with that stimulus yet. So an example of using classical conditioning to associate that unconditioned stimulus with a neutral stimulus would be, for example, a technique that Pavlov used where he noticed that his wolf dog started to drool around dinner time. Every time the dinner cart was rolled by, they would start drooling because they knew it was dinner time. So they, the scientists, him and his assistant, decided to see if they could train the wolf dogs to drool when they saw the assistant. So they started to associate food with the assistant. And pretty soon, the wolf dogs learned every time they saw this guy, food came around. So they started to drool every time they saw him. Another example would be teaching a wolf dog to expect food when they hear the marker that we talked about earlier. Again, the marker can be the sound of a clicker, a specific word, or even a whistle. So classical conditioning is the method that we use to teach a wolf dog to associate the sound of our marker with that reward that follows the marker. At first, the sound of the marker has no meaning to our wolf dog. It's just another noise or word for them. By teaching them to associate it with a reward, we have used classical conditioning, and we are teaching them to realize when they hear the marker, they did something right. So repeated enough times, we're going to sound the marker and feed the wolf dog. Basically, click, treat, click, treat, click, treat. And if you repeat that enough times, you're going to start to see them hear that click or hear that verbal yes or good, and they're going to start to look to the human in anticipation of their incoming treat. That's when you can tell they've successfully associated the sound of the marker with the arrival of food. And again, if you choose to utilize a marker in your training, this is the important first step that you take before you start teaching your dog or wolf dog any cues. So the next method of training that I use when working with fearful animals is counter conditioning. This is a technique that involves changing the emotional response of the animal when exposed to a stimulus, replacing an undesired reaction to the stimulus with a desired reaction by associating positive actions with the stimulus. This method is extremely helpful when working with fearful, reactive wolf dogs and dogs, and it has a very high level of success when it's done properly. For example, let's say a wolf dog is afraid of a vacuum cleaner, and they will run and hide whenever they see or hear the vacuum. When we use counter conditioning, we can change the wolf dog's response from one of fear to one of acceptance of the vacuum, or even excitement when they see the vacuum. The way we do this is by teaching the wolf dog that good things happen whenever they see or hear the vacuum. So every time the wolf dog sees or hears the vacuum, they will receive lots and lots of tasty treats. And those treats only appear when the vacuum is spotted or heard. Eventually, the wolf dog will learn that as soon as they see or hear that vacuum, tasty treats are on the way. And they will start to get excited about that. They'll start to get excited and happy when they see the vacuum because they're thinking ahead, knowing that those treats are coming. And they'll start to be able to get closer and closer to that vacuum because they have changed their emotional reaction from one of fear to one of tolerance and maybe even excitement. It's similar to classical conditioning in that we are teaching the wolf dog to associate good things with an object or sound. But in this case, we are also replacing an undesirable emotional response, their fear, with a desirable response, which would be anticipation, tolerance, or even excitement. The vacuum in the previous example can be substituted by any stimulus that causes our wolf dogs to feel afraid. We have the power to change the emotional response of our wolf dogs to any stimulus that they think is scary with enough work and practice. Another technique that goes hand in hand with counter conditioning is systematic desensitization. This technique involves reducing the emotional response to an aversive stimulus after repeated exposure to it. Now, it's really important for us to understand this is not the same as flooding. Systematic desensitization involves three steps. The first step is where you will teach your wolf dog a relaxation technique. For your wolf dog, this could be sitting or lying down calmly, performing cues such as giving the handler eye contact, or even touching their nose to the handler's hand. These behaviors are incompatible with behaviors of fear, such as hiding or attempting to escape and run away. So once your wolf dog has learned these relaxation techniques and they're very, very good at them, the next step is going to be to create a fear hierarchy. This is where you, as the trainer or handler, will come up with a plan to gradually, very gradually, expose the wolf dog to the stimulus they are afraid of. Baby steps are very important here, and it's key not to rush the animal through the easy stage and into the more difficult stages of exposure. Knowing your wolf dog's threshold is critical, and I will explain what a threshold is in a minute. So when we are working up the fear hierarchy, we want to start out exposing the animal to the thing they fear in a way that brings no stress. So this is going to be done at a very far distance from the trigger with the wolf dog remaining stationary. The animal should barely even realize that the trigger is there. The handler will cue the wolf dog to perform the soothing behaviors that it learned in step one. As the wolf dog's confidence grows, the distance between the wolf dog and the trigger can slowly be reduced, gradually working up to putting them in more and more stressful situations regarding being exposed to the thing they fear. Increasing the difficulty should only be done once the wolf dog is clearly comfortable with performing the soothing behaviors at the current step. Again, knowing and working with your wolf dog's established threshold here is critical. If the animal becomes upset, you should return to an easier stage and practice there more before attempting to close distance or increase the difficulty in any way. So now we really need to talk about what a threshold is. A threshold is basically an animal's line in the sand, where on one side they are comfortable with zero stress, and on the other side they are so stressed out that they feel they need to react in some way, be it with fear, aggression, or even excitement. When we are identifying the threshold, we need to pay attention to our animal's stress signals again. The threshold itself is the point at which the wolf dog goes from comfortable to not comfortable and reactive. So when your wolf dog is, let's say they're bothered by a trash can on the sidewalk, you may be able to get as close as 5 feet to that trash can before they react. So when they react fearfully, that's their threshold. You know when you are that close to the trash can, They are not comfortable, and they feel like they need to do something about that stress. If you move further back to the point where your wolf dog feels safe and they feel like they don't need to try to run away or try to attack the trash can, that's where they are feeling comfortable. They are under threshold there. The trigger and the distance of the threshold to the trigger can and will vary depending on the animal and depending on the trigger you are working with. So we already used an example of a trash can. Let's say your animal, again, can get up about 5 feet before they are just so stressed out that they feel like they have to react to the presence of the trash can. Well, your animal may also be scared of the dump truck, but that dump truck is so much more stressful that your animal will react 30 yards away, and they don't feel safe any closer than that, and they need to be more than 30 yards away to feel comfortable. It depends on how bothered they are by each trigger. Threshold is going to change depending on which trigger you are working with. When your wolf dog is under threshold, this is pretty much the sweet spot that you want to keep your animal in at all times. When they are under threshold, they are not showing any signs of stress or discomfort in the presence of the trigger. As their confidence grows when you're working with counter conditioning and systematic desensitization, the distance at which your wolf dog is able to remain under threshold will decrease in relation to the trigger. You'll be able to get closer and closer. As their confidence lessens, say if you accidentally put them over threshold and allow an unpleasant experience to happen, the distance at which a wolf dog is able to remain under threshold will increase, meaning they will need to be further and further away from the trigger to feel safe. When your wolf dog is at threshold, they may show mild signs of discomfort. They will acknowledge the presence of the trigger, but they will be able to concentrate on the handler still for the most part. You should be able to regain their attention. You should still be able to get them to perform their soothing cues. But again, we want them to remain under threshold. We don't want them to feel any stress at all. When your animal goes over threshold, again, this is the point where the stress caused by the trigger is just too much for them to handle, and they will react. Putting your wolf dog over threshold should be avoided at all costs, if possible. Every time the wolf dog is allowed to practice undesirable behaviors when they are put over their threshold, those behaviors become harder to reverse and correct. You are undoing all of the hard work you put in every time you allow your wolf dog to go over threshold. There is a really, really great website that talks about this in depth that I really recommend our listeners check out. And this is the CARE Protocol for Reactive Dogs, C-A-R-E. The website is www.careforreactivedogs.com, CAREFORREACTIVEDOGS.com. And this program is one that I use myself with my own wolf dogs if they're scared of something. This is also a protocol that I implement when I have a client who has a fearful dog. As long as you follow this protocol, the results are incredible. On the website, there's a couple demonstration videos that go over how the protocol works, and it shows the before, during, and after stages. And as you will see when you take a look, it's very impressive. I highly recommend that all wolf dog owners check out that website. Again, that's CARE Protocol for Reactive Dogs. That's going to be a huge help for you guys. Now, as far as problems or pitfalls that people encounter in training, one of the biggest problems that people have is staying consistent. A lot of mistakes that are made are actually handler error. where they may not be upholding the rules they are trying to teach their animal. So, for example, if you're trying to teach your wolf dog not to pull on the leash, but you allow them to pull you in certain situations, like let's say you're running late or your patience has run out and you just don't want to wait around until they stop pulling, well, your animal is going to have a hard time understanding that the rules are supposed to apply all the time. We have to make sure that we keep ourselves disciplined in upholding the rules that we set forth for our animals and that other members of the household do so as well. If one person doesn't allow the wolf dog, for example, to jump on people, but another person in the household encourages it or tolerates it, that's just going to confuse your animal and frustrate the person who does not want the wolf dog to jump on people. That's going to make it harder for the wolf dog to learn not to jump. Another common mistake that many people make is they tend to get really impatient when they're training. Sometimes it might feel like we're not making any progress or progress is too slow. And it's easy to overlook the baby steps of progress that our animals have made because sometimes people only look for those big light bulb moments where their wolf dog makes a big step of progress. It's really important to realize that training, especially when you're working on things like desensitization or counter conditioning, or teaching behaviors that require a lot of concentration and self-control, like polite leash skills, these things can take weeks or even months of consistent daily practice. Every animal, of course, is different, and every animal will progress at different paces. The skill of the handler at recognizing stress in their animal and at identifying their animal's threshold correctly will also greatly impact the success and progress of the animal. This is especially important for working with fearful and reactive animals like wolf dogs. And finally, I really think that the biggest mistake that people have made in the past and will make again in the future is they forget to have fun. Training our wolf dogs should not be tedious. It should not be frustrating. It needs to be a fun and enjoyable way for us to connect with them. If you are feeling frustrated during training, I can guarantee you that your wolf dog is frustrated too. In those moments, try to take a deep breath, step back, and find a way to bring fun back into the training session. If that means you stop and play with them with their favorite toy for a little bit, or just take a break and try again later, that's okay. We want our wolf dogs to enjoy working with us, just like we want to enjoy working with our wolf dogs. So let's all make sure that we approach each training session with a clear head, give ourselves enough time for the training session, and make sure that we remind ourselves we're working on communicating and bonding with our animals. So we really want to come at it with a positive attitude. And I think that's about it.
We will be right back after these words from Texas Wolf Dog Project.
Hello, this is Natasha Woodall, Vice President of Texas Wolf Dog Project and Shelter. We are an all-volunteer and donation-based 501c3 rescue and adoption facility dedicated to saving as many adoptable wolf dogs and northern breed dogs in the state of Texas as well as surrounding areas. This is based off of available foster homes, suitable adoptive homes, and, of course, financial resources for veterinary care. We support responsible ownership and public education, as well as promoting education for other rescue groups, shelters, and animal control facilities concerning proper wolf dog identification, evaluation, and care. For more information on adoption, events, volunteer work, and how to donate, please visit our website at www.texaswolfdogproject.org or email us at info@texaswolfdogproject.org or visit us on Facebook. Thank you.
This is Linda Michaels, and you are listening to Wolf Dog Radio.
Well, we're back. Krista, I have to say again that you have to be impressed by someone who takes the time to understand these amazing animals.
Deanna, let's talk wolf dog puppies and socialization. Katie brought up a point that I would like your opinion on. She talked about how you can overdo it with puppies if you take them everywhere and you meet 100 people or so. I go back to the Ian Dunbar concept when I listen to his show again, and he stated what I would think would be a little different view. Ian stated to have your puppy meet everyone, especially children and men, and give them a high-end treat so that your wolf dog has positive associations at an early age, good things for men and good things from children.
Well, I would assume that Katie was probably referring to overdoing the meet and greets. I remember on the same Ian Dunbar interview, and that was such a great point. It also worked well with the rescues and the older dogs that one might bring into the home. I also want to address and reiterate Katie's point about not going over their tolerance threshold. This can't be stated any more strongly that you will lose all the good work you have done with your puppy if you go beyond this point. And I know I didn't warn you about this, but I really wanted to hear about your experience. You've had experience with both rescue and with a puppy, and I would love to hear your experience with socialization and what you've done.
I will tell you, I have a puppy now. He's 4 weeks old. He's an upper mid content, and I take him to work with me every single day. Luckily, I work at a vet clinic. He's handled by clients. I've let clients bottle feed him. I've take him out of the kennel at work and let all of the coworkers handle him. Of course, we sanitize and we're very, very careful. That's one point that I want to bring up is you always want to bring hand sanitizer with you and make sure everybody's keeping themselves clean and sanitary so that we don't expose our puppies that are not vaccinated yet to something deadly. But I take him with me every single day, and then his my boyfriend TJ comes and picks him up and takes him to his house where he's exposed to multiple people in the household and his friends, and we take him outside. And I think it's super important. I mean, if I feel like he's scared, we immediately take him back inside, and his crate is already his safe spot. He knows exactly where it's located in the house, and he will actually run to his crate and get in there and snuggle up with his stuffed animal. So if they tell you it's enough, it's enough. And that's a puppy that was gifted to me. So I've had him since he was 10 days old. Whereas I have another upper mid content that I didn't get until she was 9 weeks. And I'm the only one who can touch her or handle her. She was not pulled and bottle fed. She's a great animal, but she's terrified. So I think the key is the window that Katie spoke of. And that would be, you know, you've got those early weeks on, and that's where you need to hit the socialization. And overdoing it, they'll let you know. If they get scared, definitely put them in a safe spot. Have a safe spot for them so that they can let you know, hey, this is too much. You know, this is where I want to be. Let's take a break. So it's different with every animal, but I think that if you're really in tune with your animal, they'll tell you, you know, hey, this is a little much today. Let's take a break. Let's go back to our happy spot. So I think that was a good point that Katie brought up.
Thank you, ma'am.
I think Katie is back with us now. Welcome back, Katie. A question came up on an online group about dominant training method with puppies. We asked to come back live, which she has agreed to do and speak about the issue. Katie, there's been some talk of late about dominant training methods with puppies. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, hello. Thank you again for having me back on for the second half. That's a really great topic to talk about. It pops up a lot in dog training and wolf dog training. So I think the very first thing that we have to remember is this dominance theory has been debunked by the very man that created it in the first place, Dr. Meck. Originally, his theory was based on studying captive wolf populations in a zoo type environment. And what was found to happen was that unlike naturally formed wild packs, captive wolves will compete more aggressively for access to resources and hierarchical dominance positions. Whereas in the wild, natural packs are formed of the two alphas, which are essentially just the breeding pair, the mom and the dad. And the rest of the wolves in the pack are their offspring. Occasionally, there may be a lone wolf that was accepted into the pack, which is, from my understanding, a little bit on the rare side. But for the most part, the pack is made up of two parents and their children, their puppies. So when we talk about alphas being dominant over the rest of the pack, we need to remember this is achieved because the parents are naturally in charge of their offspring. Just the same way that parents in a human family lead the family and, you know, the children follow along after their parents, that's how a wolf pack operates as well. And just like in human families, once the offspring are mature, they usually choose to move out and start their own family, which is when they become the alpha pair, the breeding pair. So we have to remember when we are applying these dominance-based training methods, they are based on the outdated concept based on those captive wolves that were studied in the zoo. And that behavior is very unnatural for canines. It's a very high-stress environment. They're not familiar with the other animals. They're not related in any way. There's no natural age pecking order where the parents are in charge and the older siblings help guide the youngsters and the youngsters kind of toddle along until they're old enough to get the hang of things. These animals are all trying to figure out who is going to breed, who's related to who, who's going to get access to the food, who's not going to get access to the food ahead of somebody else. So there's a lot of tension in those types of pack environments in captivity. So the behavior that we see from these captive wolves is not going to translate to how we care for our animals because we try as owners to minimize stress, to minimize the competition for resources. So we're not going to put a whole bunch of animals that don't know each other and don't get along together in the same small pen and say, okay, go compete for your food, go fight over it, and whoever eats is the one that's strongest. You know, we don't do that, hopefully. but when we talk about dominance, a lot of people have this, again, outdated concept that they need to fight their animal, that they need to show it that they are, that the human is stronger, tougher, meaner, smarter, what have you. And these methods are based on fear and infliction of pain. And again, just from everything that we've talked about so far, we've established that wolf dogs are very sensitive animals. It's hard for them to trust other creatures. If you go back to what we were talking about with the socialization windows for wolf dog puppies, if you remember, the socialization means we are exposing them to people, places, things in a positive manner so that we can help them trust their environment, trust their handlers, their owners, their family members. But when we are using methods that inflict pain or that cause them to be very afraid, we are destroying their trust. We are destroying their ability to feel safe. And we are also teaching them that in order to get their way, they need to escalate. So, for example, I have a mid-continent. His name is Anubis. And he has resource guarding behaviors, which, again, very natural for wolves and wolf dogs. But the way you want to handle that is as non-confrontationally as possible. He is resource guarding because he is afraid that I will steal his food. And if I was going to approach this from a dominance perspective, the theory would be that, oh, well, I need to show him that I'm the big bad wolf and I'm the alpha and that he's not allowed to eat before I eat and he's not allowed to eat until I tell him to. So I would make dinner time as scary as possible to keep him away from the food until I released him to eat. And that would only reinforce his fear that some big bad bully is going to come steal his food. If I was going to act like that, he would feel like, oh my gosh, this big bad bully came and they stole my food, so how am I going to keep this food? I'm hungry and I'm terrified. So the next time I see them coming, obviously growling didn't work, so next time I have to bite. Because growling did not work. They kept coming. They stole my food. They didn't listen to my warning sign. And again, we talked about all these warning signs. Showing people, hey, I'm uncomfortable. When your animal growls, when they show teeth, they mean business. And if we escalate the tension by coming at them with more force, more aggression, more intimidation tactics, we are only giving them biting as their last-ditch effort to try to protect themselves and try to protect what they are scared of losing in the first place. The way that I've handled Anubis's resource guarding is by hand-feeding him every day and making sure that it's a positive experience. He has to earn his food, so he'll sit, he'll lay down. I've taught him to shake and touch and go on a mark. He associates eating with a fun bonding experience. And it's gotten to the point where I can send him in his crate, he'll go sit in the back tail wagon, and I can pour his food out on the ground, and he'll sit there and he'll drool over it. I've got a video of this, I'll share it. And he'll drool over it, and he'll watch, and he'll wait, and he'll wait. And all I have to do is say a release word, break, and he goes and he eats his food, and I can pet him, and he's a happy boy. There was no need for any kind of aggression. There was no need to scare him or hurt him in any way, and we have corrected his resource guarding in a positive manner. So I wanted to make sure that he trusted me. Again, when we use dominance methods, we are showing our animals that they cannot trust us, that we are the big bad bully who's going to steal their stuff and hurt them and scare them whenever they don't do something that we don't like, or whenever they do something we don't like, or they don't do something we want them to do. So,
very,
obviously,
very insightful.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, I'm live, so I'm like trying not to get tongue-tied here. So, thank you to all the listeners for hanging in there with me. But you're doing great. Oh, thank you. I really can't stress enough that these methods have been scientifically disproven. They do not apply to natural canine behavior. If anybody tries to tell you, oh, well, so-and-so does this on TV, or my neighbor did this and then it worked, please realize that is the exception, and they are very, very lucky that they have not been bitten or worse. These methods are dangerous. Very dangerous. And not only for you. I mean, we have to remember that the ownership of our animals is a sensitive topic right now, all over the world. And for every person who goes out and manhandles their wolf dog and antagonizes it and terrifies it and hardens it until it bites them, you know, all it takes is one person. No matter how many of us owners do the right thing, take care of our animals, all it takes is one yahoo out there hurting their animal until it bites them or somebody else to instigate a ban or tighter restrictions on these animals that we love. So when you see somebody talking about dominance methods, you know, it may work,
Greg,
for a short
Greg
time,
just
but...
Greg just gave us the hint. I said, our producer Greg just gave us the hint. We've got to move on to our next episode.
Oh, sorry. Well, long story short, don't do it. Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed being a part of the show. Thank you to all the listeners for listening to me ramble for 10 minutes. But this has been a really great experience, and thank you to the producers and to the host. So I really had fun.
Okay, we have to mention something to you. I heard something about an almond meringue cake, maybe. Is today your husband's birthday?
It is. He turns 32 today, so we've got
definitely
a pastry shop
him.
Here. Oh, I'll
definitely
wish tell
Justin
him happy
birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yes,
you guys.
Please.
That's awesome.
We want to thank him. We want to thank him for allowing you to, you know, interrupt his birthday for a little bit and be on the show with us tonight.
Aww.
But tell Dustin we said happy 32nd.
Well, thank you very much. We're going to go tear into that cake.
Thank you
well,
for
you
this interview, Katie.
Night.
We really appreciate it. You too.
Thank you so much. And if anybody,
thanks.
Just a quick aside, if anybody ever has any questions, please feel free to message me. I'm active in most of the Wolf Dog groups. I also have my private profile that you can send me a message. I'll see that. I share pictures of my animals. I share training tips sometimes. I've got videos of me training them. So if you have any questions, I'm here to help. So, all right. Well, I'll let you
Thank
go.
You,
Thank
Katie.
You so much, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye. And now we have some important words from Project Coyote.
Each year, millions of Americans make their way to wilderness areas and national parks to get a glimpse of the magic and beauty of nature and wildlife. Visitors to Yellowstone consistently rank bears, wolves, coyotes, and foxes at the top of their list to see, with many waiting their entire lives to observe these predators in the wild. We have a long tradition of wildlife appreciation and conservation in this country, and yet few people know that millions of wild animals are killed each year by a single, little-known government agency, ironically named Wildlife Services. Hundreds of thousands more die because of trophy hunting and recreational fur trapping, and unlimited numbers more are allowed to be killed during barbaric wildlife killing contests, where children are invited to participate, and prizes are awarded to those who kill the most and the largest. The same animals that people spend millions to see in places like Yellowstone are indiscriminately killed in such brutal events. Such a cruel slaughter of animals is a betrayal of the public trust and all conservation instincts. Hello, I'm Peter Coyote. For many years, Project Coyote has been taking the lead in educating communities about coexistence, pressing for legislative and policy reform to stop this assault on wildlife, and keeping a sharp eye on wildlife services. Wildlife Services targets apex predators, wolves, coyotes, cougars, bobcats, for extermination, even though more successful non-lethal programs like the Marin Livestock and Wildlife Protection Program exist. That program is more effective, cheaper, and safer. Targeting apex predators can have disastrous results on the environment. They're like the keystone in an arch that keep the integrity of the whole environment in place. Once it's removed, the system that supports all life collapses. Project Coyote's coalition of wildlife scientists, educators, predator-friendly ranchers, and community leaders are dedicated to ending these practices and ensuring that our wildlife and our ecosystems thrive by teaching and promoting compassionate conservation and coexistence across North America.
We chose the coyote as our flagship animal because they are the most persecuted, misunderstood, maligned native carnivore in North America. And we estimate that at least 500,000 are killed every year through killing contests, hunting, trapping. This averages about one per minute. So we truly believe that if we can ultimately shift the way we view and treat coyotes, we can shift the way we view and treat all predators.
When I joined Project Coyote's advisory board, I was really impressed by the organization's dedication to bridge building, to shifting attitudes by education and building alternatives and policy programs based on sound science. Project Coyote's advisory board includes some of the most renowned ecological and social scientists in the world. Our six core programs focus on changing legislation and policies and reducing human-animal conflicts by promoting education, science, and advocacy. All financial donations go directly to supporting these programs, so you can be sure that your contributions are supporting and protecting wildlife. We're at a critical point in our planet's evolution in regards to species conservation, mass extinctions, and protecting diversity. The choices that we make today will precisely determine the kind of a planet in which our children and grandchildren live. Help us protect the future by supporting Project Coyote, by demanding that legislators incorporate sound science into their legislation and their policies, that they promote ethical considerations, and that we work together to preserve the diversity and health of our wildlife and our ecosystems. Please join Project Coyote today. Help us ensure the future.
Join us!
I encourage everyone listening right now to go to www.projectcoyote.org. This group and the dedication, passionate people within it truly speak up for the underdog, but they need our help too. To quote a passage from their site, all of our work through education, science, and advocacy strives to create fundamental and systemic changes in the ways wild carnivores are viewed and treated in North America. Project Coyote seeks to stop the wanton and cruel killing of native carnivores, to reform predator management, to create successful models of coexistence, and to inspire the next generation to care for wild nature.
I speak on behalf of all of us at Wolf Dog Radio and hope you lend your support to Project Coyote. They work to change laws and policies that protect our native carnivores from abuse and mismanagement. They, like us, advocate coexistence instead of killing. Donate to Project Coyote. The funds are used to protect wildlife, wetlands, and promote conservation through education, science, and advocacy. What's not to love about this group? Wolf Dog Radio would like to welcome Deborah Selleck, our news correspondent to Wolf Dog Radio. Welcome, Deborah. Now it's time for Wolf Dog Radio News.
Hi, Deanna. Hi, Krista. Thanks for having me on Wolf Dog Radio for In the News.
It's time for WDR News with Deb Selleck.
Hi, my name is Deb, and I'm with Wolf Dog Radio's In the News. On March 14th, 2017, My Columbia Basin, March 8, 2017. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has moved eastern Oregon up to phase 3 of its wolf management plan. This comes after 7 or more breeding pairs of wolves were documented in the region that's east of U.S. Highways 97, 20, and 395 for the first 3 years ending on December 31, 2016. A breeding pair is defined as two adult wolves that produce at least two pups and that survives to the end of the year. There are 8 packs with breeding pairs in 2016. Moving into phase 3 is a significant milestone towards the recovery of gray wolves in Oregon. ODFW wolf biologist Russ Morgan says, It shows how successful wolves can be in this state. In just 9 years, under an existing management, we have gone from no packs of wolves to multiple packs of wolves in an expanding distribution. In addition to taking a wolf census, ODFW biologists have placed radio collars on 14 wolves in 7 groups over the winter. On February 24th, OR50 was collared, making it the state's 50th collared wolf. The data collected from that wolf will help ODFW learn more about the unnamed group of wolves. They are trying to determine if it's a new pack or a pack that shifted its home range into the area previously occupied by the Inaha pack. ODFW staff is now tabulating the results of its annual year-end survey of wolves. The 2016 Wolf Annual Report will be presented to the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission and at its meeting in the Klamath Falls on April 21st. Phase 3 continues to focus on the conservation of wolves while addressing instances of wolf-human conflict. This includes the continued emphasis of using non-lethal deterrents and the use of controlled killing of wolves in certain situations. It also expands on the options to livestock producers for investigating potential wolf depredations of livestock. The plan states that controlled take of wolves can be allowed in 2 specific circumstances with ODFW approval. They are if wolves are determined to be causing declines in the population of deer and elk or in specific causes of chronic livestock depredation. These Phase 3 provisions do not replace good faith efforts at the non-lethal solution to wolf conflict. Morgan says. Take of wolves can only be considered as a management response in very specific situations, and there are no plans for controlled take at this time. Under Phase 3, either the ODFW or USDA Wildlife Services can confirm wolf depredations in eastern Oregon. Lethal removal of wolves will be decided by ODFW based on the current rigorous evidence-based investigation processes. USDA Wildlife Services will not assist in the lethal removal of wolves and cannot expand its role in depredation investigations until it has evaluated its obligations under the National Environmental Policy Act. Western Oregon remains in the Phase 1 of the Wolf Plan with protections that match those implemented when the wolves were listed as state endangered species. Wolves west of U.S. Highways 395, 78, and 95 also remain listed as endangered under the Federal Endangered Species Act. Our next news article comes to us from the U.K. Wolf cubs come to the U.K. and could be back in the wild for the first time in hundreds of years. TLE Environment. Keeping the wolves from the door could become a reality again, as some cubs have arrived in our shores. 6 of the wild animals have been shipped here from Sweden as a part of a project that could see them brought back into the wild for the first time in around 100 years. The last wild wolf in the UK was shot back in the 18th century, but these new wolves will be greeted in a much more friendly way. The pack members are 10 months old and are made up of 4 males and 2 females. The wolves will literally be howling at the moon, but also have been named after famous musicians. They are called Elvis, Sting, Lemmy, Moby, PJ, and KD. Currently, they are being held in quarantine in Devon. They will then start their new life at Wildwood Escott in Ottery, St. Mary, Devon. The cubs are part of a wildlife campaign to try and reintroduce the animals back into the wild. If wolves were reintroduced into the wild in the UK, it is likely to be in northern Scotland, and it may not happen for several years. Wildwood Chief Executive Peter Smith says, "The goal of the Wildwood Trust is to tell the story of the last 1,000 years of British wildlife, and the research project covers a vital part of this story. Wolves played an incredibly important role in our history, shaping our culture and even the landscape. It is a great privilege to have these magnificent animals at our Devon site to help us tell their story." The enclosure that Wildwood Escott's wolf pack will now call home has been specially designed to tend to their natural needs. In the future, you might see these magnificent animals when you're walking the countryside. Wildwood keeper Carrie James said, "We're really excited about the wolves. We visited them in Sweden as part of the transfer to meet their keepers and get to know them. They've each had their own personalities, and it's going to be a real pleasure working with them." Thank you so much for listening with In the News with Deb.
The Vet Tech is in.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Krista Ward, and you're listening to The Vet Tech is in. Remember to seek the advice of your veterinarian for any medical advice concerning your pet. Tonight, we will be discussing inovarial disc disease in canines. What is inovarial disc disease? Inovarial disc disease, or IVDD, occurs when the cushioning in inovarial disc between the vertebrae of the spinal column become displaced, deteriorate, bulge out, rupture, or burst, also known as herniation, into the spinal cord space. When this happens, the discs press on the nerves that run through the spinal cord, nerve damage, and in severe cases, paralysis. IVDD is sometimes referred to as a slipped or a herniated disc. IVDD is one of the most common neurological disorders in canines and reportedly affects 2% of domestic dog population. To better understand IVDD, one must take a look at the intervertebral column. A canine spine is made up of individual vertebrae. These consist of 7 vertebrae in the neck, also known as the cervical vertebrae, 13 thoracic vertebrae in the back, 7 vertebrae in the lower back, the lumbar vertebrae, 3 fused sacral vertebrae, and vertebrae in the tail, also known as the caudal vertebrae. Most canine vertebrae are made up of a body at the base, a pedicle side, and an arch top, and a dorsal spinous process. The spinal cord travels through and is protected by the vertebral canal. Between most of these vertebrae lies an intervertebral disc. The discs are made up of the outer annulus fibrosus and the inner gelatinous nucleus pulposus. You can think of a healthy intervertebral disc as a jelly donut, wherein the annulus fibrosus is the outer donut and the nucleus pulposus is the gooey jelly in the middle. These intervertebral discs act as cushions between the vertebrae. When a disc becomes unhealthy, the jelly portion of the donut dries out, blood supply to the disc slows, and it does not repair itself once it starts to degenerate. When this dying out process occurs, the outer donut weakens and the dog becomes more prone to injury. Simple daily activities such as jumping off of a chair or even walking can cause this outer portion of the disc to tear. This will cause the jelly center to squeeze out, causing bigger problems. IVDD mostly occurs in a dog's neck or the last few ribs to the low back area. Neck lesions may affect the front legs of the dog or both front and rear, while back lesions typically only affect the back half of the dog's body. What symptoms are associated with IVDD? There's a wide range of signs and symptoms associated with canine IVDD, ranging from mild pain to complete paralysis. Most cases will fall somewhere in between. Since the intervertebral disc essentially serve as shock absorbers for the spine, there are plenty of signs that you can look for from your dog. And since IVDD can lead to permanent nerve damage, recognizing your dog's symptoms in a timely manner and getting treatment is extremely important. Some signs and symptoms of IVDD include unwillingness to jump, pain and weakness in the rear legs or lameness, anxious behavior such as constant panting or bulged eyes, muscle spasms over the back or neck. These are typically seen, it almost looks like a ticking motion in the neck area or at the base of the spine, hunched back or neck with tense muscles, reduced appetite and activity level, loss of bladder and or bowel control, urinary and fecal incontinence,
neck pain and stiffness, reluctance to move the neck and the head, a lowered head stance, back pain and stiffness, yelping out unexpectedly when touched or moving, abdominal tenderness or tenseness, sensitivity to touch and movement, dragging one or more legs when walking, stilted or tentative gait, tremors, trembling, and shaking, a lack of coordination, also known as ataxia, abnormal reflexes, collapsing, or paralysis in one or more limbs. There is also a grading scale used for dogs with IBDD. Grade 1 would be pain only. These dogs are able to walk normally, but they exhibit signs of pain, including reluctance to move or jump, shivering, crying, muscle spasms, and or a tense abdomen. The second one would be grade 2, which is ambulatory paraparesis. These dogs are typically able to walk, but they are weak and wobbly in their rear legs. They may cross their back legs when walking, splay out, knuckle over, or stumble in their back legs. Grade 3 is non-ambulatory paraparesis. These dogs are still able to move their legs and wag their tails, but they are not strong enough to support their own weight and walk. Grade 4 is paraplegia. These dogs have no voluntary movement in their rear legs. Grade 5 is paraplegia with absent or no deep pain. In addition to being unable to move the back leg, they are unable to feel their back legs. These symptoms can be sudden, intermittent, or gradual in onset. Look for signs after your dog has engaged in strenuous physical activity or experienced any physical trauma. However, they can also appear at random, so always pay attention to your pet's movements and demeanor. IBDD is a degenerative process and does not result from sudden trauma, but a sudden trauma can cause a rupture or a herniation in a dog whose discs were already weakened by IBDD. Ruptured discs can occur from jumping or playing fetch. Injuries caused by attacks or being hit by a car can cause similar symptoms, but it is not the same as IBDD. Please seek immediate care from your veterinarian if you are concerned that your pet may have any signs or symptoms of IBDD. I want to thank you all for listening to The Vet Tech Is In tonight. I am Krista Ward, signing off with howls and hugs. And now a word from our sponsor, JK Diversified.
Hi, listeners. This is Robbie Ames. Today, I'm here to tell you about an exciting new sponsor of the Ask Cat Show, JK Diversified Construction and Development, serving the Tampa Bay area. The inspiring owners of this company are Tom Shumlick and Kit Prang. Between Tom, general contractor, architect, interior designer, and Kip, building perfectionist extraordinaire, you can be assured of a design-build experience that will fulfill all your dreams of that perfect custom home or business. Just visit their website at jkdiversified.com. That's jkdiversified.com.
And now it's time for everyone's favorite Raging Cajun, Jerry Mills.
Wolf Dog Radio, you're running with the pack.
Hello, this is Jerry Mills, and you have entered the Wolf Tejas Den in my corner of the Wolf Dog Radio Show. I'm talking tonight on years up-and-coming crop of wolf dogs and wolf dog breeders. This subject is like hand-delivering a porcupine or playing catch with a lit fuse of dynamite. Irregardless, I've got some things to say and that I think need saying. To you first-time buyers out there looking for a wolf dog puppy, and even you current owners looking to acquire another puppy, you need to whoa up a minute and put your thinking hats on. First off, finding a puppy is easy because they are everywhere. Puppy producers are everywhere and anxious to sell you a puppy and will tell you anything you want to hear and every reason in the world why science is wrong and their animals are the exception to the rule. They will make up a lineage or tell you lineages don't matter. They will say nobody has a real lineage, or they'll say lineages are just a list of dead breeders' names on a piece of paper. Well, don't buy into it. The old lines and foundation stock from which the cream of the crop has been produced and the foundation stock for today's wolf dogs are because the old breeders kept records. They knew what animals were in their lines. They knew which ones had issues. They knew which animals showed what traits and what temperaments for a certain animal, one that bred true to form and reproduced just what they were looking for. Now, that's not saying they were all perfect or that they were all honest, but by God, the largest majority were, and the rest knew who was crooked. So when you're buying a puppy, you're buying not just that puppy, but part of every animal that went into making that puppy. Their looks, their temperament, their health, their longevity, and everything that goes along with it. That's things that only a lineage can tell you. That's not something you can tell by just looking at mom and dad, not even in the least. Wolf dogs mature slowly, especially high confidence. The animal that you have at 2 years of age might not be the same animal you have at 5 or even 8 years of age. You need to know these things. If you don't know their ancestors, you have no way of determining these things. Select a breeder that can tell you. Make some phone calls to the breeders that these parents. Then go to the grandparents' breeder. If you can't do that, you are buying from a puppy producer and not a real breeder. You are purchasing a mystery wolf dog, just like getting an animal from the pound or from a rescue, except you've met the parents and you have a puppy. Harsh words, but true nonetheless. Is this really what you want? Is this the kind of puppy you want to spend money on and bring into your home and then hope for the best? Are you going to get on the groups and fight over trying to get the wolf dog you just purchased phenotyped by strangers? Well, it happens all the damn time, and I don't care what mom and dad look like or act like. You don't know what's in their background. Mom and dad's siblings might be batshit crazy and not even resemble them. Don't support backyard breeders, and that's just what they are, by buying mystery pups. You're contributing to a huge problem when you do. If you love wolf dogs, truly love wolf dogs, don't do it. Now, the breeders out there, I don't care how popular you are. I don't care what a big Facebook name you have or what kind of huge following you have. If you're producing these kinds of puppies, you're a problem and a downfall to wolf dogs. I've heard, screw you, I had buyers for all my puppies. Well, that don't mean shit about what you're selling. That tells me you're making money and don't care. If you're producing more puppies than you can take back to your own facility, you're a problem waiting to happen. Prime example. I heard a prospective breeder that's having their first friggin' litter of high-content puppies with no lineage at their legal limit on the animals that they can have where they live, approach a well-known rescue facility, wanting to split costs to have space for their puppies in case anything happened. I'm like, seriously? I'm going to say it again. Breeders, if you don't have lineage, you don't know anything about what you're producing and selling. All the home checks and screening in the world don't change that. There are thousands of wolf dogs with unknown heritage. There are hundreds of first-time buyers getting screwed and second-time buyers trying again to purchase another wolf dog because the first one that they bought wasn't what they paid for. Breeders, if you truly want to be a legitimate breeder, have your lineages. know what is in the background of your animal. If you have animals with unknown heritage, stop breeding them. Be responsible. Be legitimate. Oh, my God, I can hear it now. Well, that would cost you money. You can't afford to buy more animals. How would I keep on breeding? Well, the answer is you won't. Can anyone imagine a world of wolf dogs with good backgrounds, predictable behaviors, sound bodies, and sound minds, being able to purchase the right puppy for your needs? Well, that will never happen if today's trend continues. Breeders and buyers alike hold the key to the future of wolf dogs and our rights to have the animals of our choice. Breeders breed responsibly and place pups responsibly. Buyers buy responsibly and stop supporting backyard breeders and puppy producers. Well, that's it, folks. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks for listening to the Wolf Chaos Bin.
I always love hearing the Tejas Den. He's blunt and to the point. And we should think about what both Katie and Jerry said about puppies, owning, breeding. There's so much information behind it.
Well, thank goodness you can go to www.wolfdogradio.com and listen to this show again in case you missed some of the great points that were brought up today. Speaking about Wolf Dog Radio, our next show will feature the Apex Protection Project. Back to you, Krista.
I really want to thank Katie Beaver for taking the time out of her busy day to talk with us at Wolf Dog Radio. I hope we can have her back soon. There are so many facets to wolf dogs. Those who love them still learn every single day. New perspectives can affirm our methods, or they can refine them. Either way, it's important that we learn.
If you have any questions about the show, please email us at questions@wolfdogradio.com. And again, check out our website at www.wolfdogradio.com for more information.
There is an old Serbian saying that says, always be prepared for a tiger. If a pussycat comes, no worries. But if the tiger comes, or the wolf, you are not caught unprepared. Having a wolf dog means more than you have a cool macho critter to parade through the flea market saying, hey, I have a wolf. It has been proven time and time again that becoming educated before their forepaws hit your driveway is in the best interest of humans and companion critters and will continue with surprises, challenges, and delights for the next 15 years or so. Everyone be prepared for a tiger or a wolf or yourself. You can never learn too much. This is Krista Ward wishing you all a pleasant evening, good night, and thank you for listening from our den to yours.
You are listening to Wolf Dog Radio.